With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah.
The thing is, it just made you... should never judge people off like digital communication, but it just made me go up to school in the mornings and look at people and think, I hate.
That's Andy Brussel saying that, James.
Yeah, exactly. James, I like
that's
people.
The nicest man in football media saying.
I like people.
Does anyone else think it's amazingly... Actually, I'm going to rephrase that because, James, you might still be a bit sore about it. Does anyone else think it's interesting that the week after we do a little section on the show about travel tips that you are grounded?
Well, no, I've got a new travel tip, which is don't travel with British Airways.
Listen, you can actually listen to Football Ramble daily episodes on British Airways flights long haul. So
if you get on the
plane,
people should definitely stick with BA. A bit of housekeeping before we start. Football Ramble is out on tour from Thursday, 26th of September. Myself, Luke, Jim, Marcus and Pete are hitting the road at dates and venues all around England through September, October and the start of November. And then on the 5th of November, we are at New York for the 5th and the 6th. And then Toronto on the 7th, Chicago on the 8th. Exciting to take it over to the US as well. Get your tickets at ramblelive.com. The tickets for the American shows are selling very, very quickly. So please do get in there by going to ramblelive.com to make sure you don't miss out. English shows as well. We're probably coming to a venue near you. It's going to be lots of fun. James and Andy sat opposite me do feature in the live show in some capacity, but they won't be able to tell you how because it's a surprise. So everyone from the Football Ramble Daily family pretty much is involved in some way. So if you like this show, or you like the show we do on a Monday and a Friday particularly, do come along, get your tickets at ramblelive.com. Guys, there's only one place to start this week, and I think that is really with PSG 3, Real Madrid 0. James and or Andy, take it away.
What, Madrid to win 4-3 at the Bernabeu?
Yeah.
4-0.
Yeah, 4-0, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I guess a huge part of the story for a lot of people will be Real Madrid and their difficulties. And, you know, I could point out that if we go back a couple of years, a similar result, well, an identical result actually for Bayern Munich, saw the end of Carlo Ancelotti's tenure at the Allianz. He got sacked the very next day. Now, I'm not suggesting that is going to happen to Zinedine Zidane. It's not happened at the time of recording. Maybe right. We should leave a short, respectful gap so you can put in an edited bit if it actually happens, Luke. But it just made me think how far they've got to go to arrive at a coherent unit. I mean, there's been a lot of talk in the opening part of the season about how they've spent 300 million euros to... you know, arguably not really improve their team.
And we saw a lot of the players that they signed actually for the, you know, all playing together. Mendy, Militao, Obviously, Hazard.
Well, that's
got
it.
Two in the ratings in L'Equipe.
It's almost like they're pre-season, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the middle of September, I have to say that the Eden Hazard 2 out of 10. I mean, come on. He wasn't that bad. He really wasn't that bad. He was pretty good.
Drop static.
I thought at the start of the game. Yeah, but he moved enough to create space for Fernand Mendy to stretch his legs down the left side. It's just to mark a player, just to belittle him rather than actually reflect his performance, is to make a point. It's like Renato Sanchez got 2 out of 10 for his display for Lille against Ajax.
Don't go after Andy's Portuguese players.
No way.
Forget.
Don't touch my babies. David O'Leary. But what is there to be made of the idea? And you touched on it there, but let's explore that further. That they spend all that money, yet they start if not a clutch Champions League game, it's a big game away at PSG in a competitive group.
It's the only way of measuring yourself in the group stage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they start with the midfield of James, Kroos and Casemiro. Players who have been hanging around for a long while.
All I would say is it's a lot better than at the weekend against Levante, where they're 3-0 up, they take off Casemiro, put on Hazard, and all of a sudden they're absolutely overrun.
So what did Hazard get rated after that game?
Yeah, he's one of only 4 players to ever get a 2.
Two in back-to-back games.
Yeah. I don't think he got El Crack or El Dandy in ass, let's put it
that
way.
But they were overrun by midfield, but in particular against PSG, I should say, time and time again, in particular by Idrissa Gueye, who looked amazing. He looked imperious in both facets of the game. Indeed, absolutely, and I think that is an unheralded, perhaps a bit unfashionable signing for a Champions League club to make.
Yes,
yeah, he's made a huge difference to them and in an area they needed improving in.
But isn't that their summer in microcosm? They've made the signings they needed rather than necessarily glamorous signings, and that's worked for them. Keylor Navas falls in that boat as well. Abdou Diallo to a lesser extent, I suppose.
Madrid got beaten at the end by a team that had Gueye on the field, ex-Everton, Choupo-Moting, ex-Stoke, and Ander Herrera, ex-United.
Good to see him back though, Ander Herrera. I mean, he had a difficult injury. I think Ander Herrera is a good player. I was surprised he didn't fight harder to keep hold of
him. He's going to be a good squad player for them.
And again, maybe perhaps what they need, right?
Yeah, it is what they need. And they were so light in midfield last season. I mean, I think if you go back a year and look at the way they lost at Liverpool, where they lost to that late goal, but I mean, really, they were battered. They were lucky to be in that. And their midfield was absolutely non-existent. Mm. Now, I think this was a bit of a risk, and a lot of people in France thought this was a bit of a risk before the game, that Marquinhos started as the midfield anchor, because the guy who's arguably your best defender is playing in midfield despite the fact that you've brought midfielders in, so he doesn't have to do that job anymore. So if it had gone wrong, Tuchel would have had some questions to answer, but it worked fantastically. And I think for the first time since Motta, Matuidi, Verratti, you had the sense of a Paris Saint-Germain midfield triangle that actually worked, that was actually complementary with each other. And you talked about, Luke, about where Real Madrid were lacking in midfield. I think the game is just as much about the strength that Paris Saint-Germain had in midfield.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair. And I don't know, we talked a bit about Marquinhos and the fact that why should he need to play in midfield again in one of the wealthiest, you know, ambition to be the most successful team in Europe. But I do think that some of this stuff's overlooked, because the defensive midfield, holding midfield kind of role is obviously treated by some coaches at the top level as being interchangeable with playing centre-back. I mean, if you look at what Guardiola does, he does that a lot. I mean, he takes midfielders and makes them centre-backs. And there are a lot of transferable skills, shall we say.
Centre-backs do a lot of midfield stuff these days, build up from the back.
Exactly. So
break the lines with the passes.
The roles are, I wouldn't say they're interchangeable, because everyone's got a role to play, of course, and the roles are clearly quite different in some respects. But I wonder if the skills are transferable enough where Tuchel feels quite happy with that.
What I think is interesting is we've been talking about this game for 5 minutes now, and we've not mentioned the fact that Cavani, Neymar and Mbappe weren't playing.
Yeah. And Choupo-Moting until after an hour.
I mean, that's the embarrassment of riches we're talking about here, you know. But, you could say that, but also, what about a word for Di Maria, Andy? You were saying to me, I think it was earlier this morning, that
Di Maria perhaps doesn't enjoy the reputation he should have based on the numbers he posts for PSG. And again, he's made the difference there against an old team in a Champions League game.
Absolutely. He is absolutely vital to them. And maybe people are just starting to come around to that, because ever since Neymar arrived, it was assumed that he would be the odd man out. Now, of course, you can position him somewhere else in the team. He doesn't have to play in the front three. He had to play in the front three last night because they were stretched. But he's someone who frequently takes responsibility, and his numbers are better than you would think. I mean, you look at last season, 19 goals, 17 assists, 21 and 12 the season before. He never lets them down, and he never lets them down in a variety of positions. And despite the fact that right up until very recently, people have been saying, oh, well, really, they're going to bin him off for someone more glamorous. This is one of the very best players in the world. He's top 20.
Yeah,
he's top 20.
He also did it, by the way, along in a forward three with two brand new PSG players alongside him as well. Again, against Real Madrid.
I mean, with Sarabia, you are going to get a heap load of work, whatever happens.
Yeah.
And the thing with Sarabia is he has been a bargain signing of the season in waiting for a long time because of his low release clause. And that, going back to what we were saying before about Paris Saint-Germain making the right signings rather than necessarily the most glamorous ones, he definitely falls into this category. James, I wanted to ask you about Icardi, though, because...
What's he done now?
Yeah, it's not your fault. Don't worry. We're not holding you responsible as the Italian correspondent, but he's not your problem anymore, basically.
I miss him. But
on paper, the difference between Cavani and Icardi...
I thought you were going to say, what's it going to do for his confidence to be subbed off by Choupo-Moting? For Choupo-Moting.
That's what happens if you don't play for a year.
Yeah. No, carry sorry, Andy.
Choupo-Moting's a good squad player. Leave him alone. He's not quite in the Renato Sanchez...
Mold.
Sort of level of protection, but I do feel as if I should put an...
You feel a bit of responsibility for Choupo-Moting.
Yeah, I do. But I would say that on paper and on the pitch most of the time, the gap between Cavani and Icardi couldn't be any more. Cavani sweats every last drop that he's got, covers every blade of grass. Icardi is one of those guys, a bit like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. You're getting penalty box excellence, but at the same time, he's going to touch the ball 15 to 20 times a game, and you've got to live with it.
Icardi happy with that. Wanda's not.
Yeah. Well, Icardi was playing this game like he wanted to get closer to that Cavani role. Like he was saying, I can replace this guy. His all-round contribution was fantastic.
I think he's a better footballer than people give him credit for. Mm. We saw, particularly in Spalletti's first season, I think he ended up with 7 or 8 assists, usually for even Perisic, and they had a very good understanding, the pair of them. And I think, given the managers that he played for towards the end of his career, it was expected at Inter for him to develop as someone who can play outside of the penalty area. But to some extent, there was always a case that you don't want to take away what his strengths are, get him away from his strengths.
So like the argument that Cavani would be a better finisher if he didn't run 12 kilometres a game, for example?
Well, I mean, I think...
Because I think that's a valid argument.
Yeah. Well, in terms of him keeping his composure, being able to be lucid because he's...
If you're puffed, you know, you can't, can you?
Yeah. I mean, I think Cavani, as you mentioned, one of the things, it's not just his work rate, but he... A little bit like Icardi, his movement is fantastic in the penalty area. I don't think his finishing is quite as good as Icardi's.
No, I don't think it is either.
It's not, question.
Icardi needs half a chance, he'll score 2 goals. That's just one chance? Yeah.
Half a chance?
That's elite. Goals.
That's elite,
yeah.
Isn't it?
You look at the XG stats for that, it's off the chain.
literally infinity.
but I think it's the options that Tuchel now has at PSG. Midfield, as you mentioned, Andy, was a real kind of threadbare part of the team for them last year, as was fullback. Fullbacks at the moment, I don't think are the players that you look at and think they're class out there. I think Meunier is a very good player.
Both made big contributions last night, didn't they?
Bernat, Uli Hoeneß, doesn't really rate him.
Yeah. But which makes every game, good game he has so sweet.
I think they're both fullbacks who, again, maybe don't have the profile that other fullbacks do at the top of the game, and yet they are very good fullbacks. It's like a little bit like Di Maria not getting the credit you believe he deserves. It's ultimately because he's not a particularly marketable, not a particularly photogenic athlete or personality or whatever, but not an extroverted personality. These players often get forgotten about.
You're right, but there is a difference between, say, Di Maria and the pairing of Meunier and Bernat, because Di Maria is still an elite player.
Mm.
Whereas I think you're right. I don't think you could say that about the other two. I do wonder what they said to each other in the cuddle after they played that little 1-2, by which point Real Madrid are absolutely dying. Mm. I mean, do you reckon they went up to each other and said, I'm Cafu and you're Roberto Carlos?
Yeah. I'd love if they did. What does this mean for... Let's broaden this out. What does this mean for Zinedine Zidane? I mean, the narrative is there for everyone to see. Never go back, never do this, never do that. They're in a shit state compared to what they were. You can't repeat it, et cetera, et cetera.
Minestra riscaldata.
Yeah. So. What does that translate to?
Reheated soup.
Reheated soup never tastes as good.
It's not as good as the first time.
Absolutely.
Cold pizza, on the other hand.
Yeah, Andy, I'm going to have to beg the difference.
I would always reheat pizza the next day.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Because the cheese
gets
all
weird. I'm not a leftovers guy. Just, you know.
Really?
No.
What does it mean for Zizou? What does this mean? Is it something not to be too concerned about? Or, as I suspect, given that what you guys said earlier, it's the only way to properly test themselves in this Champions League group, and they failed that test. Is this something we should be worried about or not? We talk about Real Madrid scraping through the group or getting through the group by any means necessary and being set up to peak later in the season. It's a dangerous game to play that when you lose the first game 3-0.
Yeah, but I do think in this group they should still cruise through, probably in second place now. But it's not really the result. It's the performance. It's where they're at. And it's the composition of the team. And like James was saying about, or was it you that was saying, Luke, about the composition of the midfield, it does feel very retro.
Yeah, it's old.
I don't think you can overlook the fact that Gareth Bale was their best player.
Yeah, it's not necessarily old in numbers, it's just old as in it's been there for ages, and he's supposed to be doing something new, and he's not really in midfield, particularly in this particular case.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's not really his fault. We've got to say the fact that Eden Hazard has been injured so far is not his fault, and that's going to take time for it all to gel, but it does feel clunky at the moment. But
is Hazard really going to play in midfield for Real Madrid?
No, I think he'll play on the left side of attack. And, you know, that was their idea, what they're calling the BBH. I mean, they got lazy. They're not even creating proper acronyms anymore, are they? But
BBH.
I think it does make sense. And we saw little...
Sounds like a party legal high.
It does. We saw little hints of how it could work practically, I thought, especially in the second half, when Hazard dropped in inside, putting him more into a sort of a number 10 position and creating the space for Mondi to go outside him. That could work. So to say they're completely irredeemable, I don't think is correct. But that there's so much work to do at this stage in the season. I mean, they're not going to have played themselves... Well, I don't think they're going to have played themselves out of Champions League contention by Christmas, looking at what else is in the group. But bear in mind that Zidane was saying in the run into last season when they were struggling and they were looking at this rebuild effort, he was saying, my priority for next season is winning La Liga. Does anyone think they even have a slight chance of doing that?
No.
I always think when you've had a period of sustained success, as they have in the Champions League, let's be clear about that rather than in La Liga. As long as those players are still around, it's very hard to move on from them. And I think Zidane is kind of caught between two stools in knowing that this team needs refreshing, but also knowing from past precedent that he can depend, or believes he can depend, on guys who've not only made this team play really good football in the past, but are winners as well. And I saw it with Inter, for example, in 2010, when they moved on initially from that, they re-upped the guys who got them the treble, even though they were over the hill, gave them big pay rises. Mm. These guys were really influential characters in the dressing room, and you could see, you know, when results were going against them, the veterans did stand up and be counted. They would say, this isn't our standard, this has to change. And I can imagine if you're a manager and you're hearing that, you're like, that's what I need to hear. That's what I want to hear. But the problem is, can they actually change it at this stage in their career? And I think that's an issue. And with Zidane, you look at the fixtures that are coming up. They're going up to play against Sevilla this weekend. Sevilla, top of the table. They've got Atletico Madrid in the Madrid derby. Next weekend, the following weekend as well.
If he gets beaten by Lopetegui, you think he'll get that far?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We come full circle, Andy. So, and I think in some respects that appointment, remember, they had a real problem attracting a successor to Zidane, and they ended up with Lopetegui sabotaging Spain's World Cup at the same time.
And their own short to medium term future.
Also, it was kind of like, well, what does that say about, you know, top managers looking at Real Madrid and the job there? So I'm sure Jose Mourinho sat in his sat on his sofa in Belgravia, twiddling his thumbs, looking at his phone, scrolling.
One thing we should say about that Sevilla Real Madrid game that's coming up: Sevilla top of the table under Lopetegui, and he's done it whilst integrating like 8-9 new players. I mean, Monchi has over Monchied himself this this summer, and yet still, they look pretty good.
As Neil Young said, it's easy to get buried in the past when you're trying to make a good thing last. Isn't it?
Indeed.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
When I said that, when you said earlier, Andy, does anyone think Real Madrid have even got a slight chance of winning La Liga this season? And I said no. They've got a slight chance. I mean, they've got a slight...
I mean, statistically, they have a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But are you? I'm surprised that you two are so strong that they you don't... You're clearly implying that you don't think there's much chance at all of them doing anything domestically this season.
And this coming from Andy, who said Barcelona on the back of that Dortmund game are on the turn.
Yeah.
What, there's
nothing,
he said this all season so far.
There's nothing to say that they both can't be on the turn, is there?
No, I mean, that's true, Andy.
Well, that would be very spectacular. What about, let's look back at
to how some of the Italian teams got on in Champions League.
They did great.
Not just because we've got
four
James
wins
here.
Out of four.
No. Not just because we've got you here, James. But I think there's some really interesting stuff coming out of it. I want to start with Napoli beating Liverpool, because that's a good result against the current European champions, although Liverpool's away record in the Champions League isn't fantastic.
I notice you're massaging his shoulders before you stick the knife in with Inter and Conte.
Yeah. James has already said to me, too early, Conte. I'm not fielding any questions about Conte. It's too early. So perhaps we'll leave that one for next. But I do really want to come on to Atalanta as well. But James, what did you make of Napoli sort of grinding out a win against Liverpool? They rode their luck a little bit. They took their chances late on when they came.
I thought this was a really good game. I thought both teams played well. I thought Liverpool certainly played better than when they went to the San Paolo last year and also lost. I think it was interesting to see, for example, Napoli play differently than they did a year ago and still be able to confound Liverpool in some respects, or certainly pose a threat. Both teams, I thought, and I know people will say, well, Manolas almost let Salah in and Meret had to make a big save and Van Dijk is culpable for the second goal that Llorente finishes to kind of finish off the game. I thought there's some great centre-back play in this game. And I thought just Napoli came out second half and, to use a football cliche, wanted it more in that I think they believed that they could get at Liverpool. And Mertens, I thought, had a fantastic game, coming short, helping them elude the press, build attacks. Ancelotti, he is extremely canny. And this is his team now. It's not Sarri's team. He has assembled it in such a way that he doesn't want specialists in positions. He wants players who can do everything. Mm. And you see that with Napoli's midfield now, particularly with Fabian. You see it with Zielinski, who didn't start this game, but came on. And you see it with Elmas, who they signed from Fenerbahce. These are kind of multi-purpose midfield players who can screen a defence, who can play a final pass, who can get out of tight spaces, but are physical enough to knock other people off the ball as well. And they've got a lot of weapons. And I think they, you can focus on the penalty and whether it was a penalty or not. I think Callejon did brilliantly in order to make, sort of three frames of the VAR decision look like it was a penalty, and then only one make it look that is absolutely not a penalty. I mean, that is masterful.
Did he get it brilliantly to undermine the referee's authority and make it hard for him to referee the game, James?
but you know what? People often sort of snarkily say, do players practice diving in training? You have to say, the quality of dive, it was exactly the same as the Mertens one that got a penalty at Florence a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. How is let's not disappear down a VAR black hole, because I want to ask you a question about some Napoli players in a minute. How is VAR not overturning that?
From my experience in Serie A, and this is the last couple of years.
So this is a Champions League thing though, so it's a different thing.
Sure, but I think this is also relevant as well because it's happened, is that if the first images that you are shown are ones that kind of make it look like it was a penalty, and you immediately see that and you're under pressure to basically get that decision right, and you want to make it right as quickly as possible, human beings again involved, you'll be like, that's a penalty. And I don't know whether they got to see the shot where it's a clear kind of Callejon dive, whether they actually got to see
in
that
which
eventually.
Order they saw it as well.
And I think that is an issue.
So they're saying that it's not. So basically, what you're implying there then is that they're of the opinion that it's not clear and obvious. So the official, the original ruling can stand.
No, I think it's clear and obvious from one of the images that you see, but I think it depends when they saw that image and in what order they saw that image. If you know what I mean. Ultimately, it's up to the match director to get them the kind of images, and I think sometimes you can be conditioned by what you see first, second, rather than what you see third, if you know what I mean.
I think if we carry on like this, James, what I think is that we are going to have the first red card for some players storming the VAR room.
well, that's why they
be
want
a bloody
it to
long
be like
run in England.
Miles away.
I mean, I think I'm right in saying that in the game last night,
Napoli played almost like a more traditional 4-4-2. Now, of course, under Sarri, we saw players like Insigne and Callejon play as part of a forward three. They both played almost as like authentic wingers yesterday, didn't they? And they both played, they both acquitted themselves pretty well in the face of some, let's just say, at the very least, good quality fullbacks that Liverpool have got. Mm. Were you impressed with how they've applied themselves in this new Ancelotti style at this level?
I think this feeds into the discussion I was having about the kind of players they've gone and acquired, players who are kind of universal and can play multiple positions and do multiple different things. Because I think if you focus on it being 4-4-2, if you watch them when they've got the ball, it's actually like 3-2-4-1 in the way they space themselves on the pitch. Because when, you know, Mario Rui and Di Lorenzo go forward, you know, Insigne will come inside, play in the half space.
So it's very flexible.
It makes it, I think, very difficult for teams to pick them up. And this is a team that I think is still still benefits a great deal from the education that they got under Maurizio Sarri in terms of how much he focused on one touch, skill, posture in terms of how you receive the ball, so you can then play that forward pass instantly. I think that the chemistry between the front three in particular is still something that they're benefiting from to this day. They're a very flexible team, and they're a team that is used to scoring a lot of goals. And you look at Mertens, who's only been a centre forward for 2.5 years. I think he's now one or two goals away from matching Diego Maradona with 115 goals in all competitions for Napoli. He's just probably my favourite player on the planet at the moment, Mertens.
He'll never match him in terms of numbers of banners around the San Paolo, though, will he?
No. I think colleague Miguel Delaney was remarking, because he was there for the game, how, you know, one team love one player, one personality more than Naples loves.
Oh, it's incredible.
Than Diego
for a
Maradona.
Player who played from such a long time ago as well. Mm. It's incredible.
But what I would say also is that I thought Koulibaly was exceptional in this game. Allowed them to play with courage, play higher up the pitch, because he was able to get back, snuff out anything that came into the penalty area. And one of the things that was surprising, given how Napoli have started the season, they conceded 3 against Fiorentina, 4 against Juventus. They don't concede in this game. And I felt that they were in some respects reminiscent of the good old Juventus that we used to see under Allegri, which is when they have to defend in their own penalty area, nothing gets past them. And that's what happened. And that's what I think a lot of people were hoping for when they signed Koulibaly and Manolas. And I think Manolas, although he kind of made a mistake second half, which Salah nearly punished him for, and we should mention again, some great goalkeeping in this game. Adrian's save from Mertens at the far post, and also a Moret save from this mistake Manolas made, and Salah's shot.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I think that and the Samp game last weekend underlined how important he is to them, and that he's absolutely the number one now.
He's been brilliant. Even in the Juventus game where he concedes 4 goals, he was brilliant in that one as well. Made 2 real kind of highlight, real material saves. But I think Manolas, one of the reasons Firmino couldn't really get in the game, aside from that headed chance he had towards the end of the second half, is because they were really aggressive about stepping out and anticipating those balls into Firmino. You know, one of the real problems that teams face when they play Liverpool is Firmino coming short, linking the play, playing those little back heels and flicks around the corner. They never really allowed him to do that. And I think that's really difficult to do over 90 minutes. So I think they deserve a lot of credit for that.
Well, you also, if you do that, you then leave space in behind that the other two can exploit. And particularly Mane at the moment is in great form. And he actually acquitted himself quite well. Elsewhere in Group E, Lars Sivertsen, also of this parish, who pops in to see us from time to time, and his favourite player, I mean, if your favourite player is young Dries's pieces, as Marcus Speller would call him, Lars Sivertsen is certainly Erling Haaland, who appears to be some kind of genetically modified super forward sent from another planet to destroy all other forwards.
And sent from West Yorkshire.
Yeah.
I think we might have heard that once or twice this week.
I think it's 17 goals in 9 games now. for the teenager.
I can't remember the last time a player...
Do you expect him to be in the next franchise of Thor?
Yeah, it feels a bit like that.
With Hemsworth.
I'd love to get your guys' feelings and thoughts on him as a player, because he looks like someone we're going to be seeing a lot more of, particularly as Salzburger in the same group as Liverpool, so we'll see him come to Anfield and all the rest of it. I wonder if you guys are effusive about your praise for him as Lars is.
Can you remember the last time a player arrived at a club and so quickly made it clear that they just can't hold him for much longer? I mean, and Salzburg are not a small club, and they're not a small team. They're a team that hits hard in Europe, and, you know, they've waited a long time to get into the Champions League group stage proper. And I felt he really felt that in this game against Genk. I mean, he's a young man in a hurry, and they're a team in a hurry.
A Genk poor, Andy?
They've not started the season well at all.
Yeah, okay.
They've started very, very poorly. They lost their coach, and Felice Matsu is struggling to hold it down so far.
Okay.
There's no getting around that.
I just wondered if there was a comment about the opposition based on how Haaland played.
They looked naive.
Bit of both.
Yeah.
The number of times they were caught on the counter-attack, either from their own set pieces.
Like again and again.
Situations.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like a Frank Lampard team. Carry on.
But, you know, Salzburg are experienced in European competition and a good standard of European competition if you look at what they've done in the Europa League in the last couple of years. But Haaland was absolutely terrific. I mean, we heard Lars telling the story about him and taking the match ball home to bed, didn't we?
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago. So our subscribers might have spotted that on social media.
He said he would treat it like his girlfriend for the night.
Yes.
Chilling. Absolutely chilling.
Lars was telling another story this week that I think one of the directors of Salzburg was walking through the city with his son, and they spotted Haaland in his car. This was the day before the match, and waved at him, and he pressed the button to put the window down, and he's in his car listening to the Champions League anthem at full whack,
just pumping himself up.
Yeah.
What I liked watching that game was when he scored. I think it was before his hat-trick goal, but he was clearly in the moment. And able to really kind of appreciate what he was doing, because the game had resumed, Genk had kicked off again, and the announcer in the stadium was calling out his name, and he was like still celebrating and then kind of working the crowd as well.
Right,
that was brilliant. But I mean, there are two things that stand out to me about Haaland. Not only the kind of four hat tricks already this season, the 9 goals he scored in the Under-20 World Cup in one game against Honduras. But unlike Martin Odegaard, he decided to take a kind of intermediary step rather than go straight to the big time.
Was he linked with truly big clubs then, was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's helped him. He's gone to a league which is a step up from Norway. But not a step too far. He's gone to a club which has nurtured a lot of talent and is all about nurturing talent whilst also instilling a winning mentality in being successful domestically and going far in Europe.
It's a stimulating environment, but it's not too much, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, getting the kind of education that Mane and Naby Keita got whilst they were at Salzburg. And then the other thing is just watching him. He's 6'4".
Yeah. He's a man grown. He's a man grown. At 19
and 58 days.
A man still growing, maybe. Who knows?
Imagine that.
And I think often when centre forwards are that size, you fall into cliches about them, don't you? You say they're a target man. They're going to be good in the air. They're going to be good at holding up the ball and all that sort of thing. Watching him, he is a player who wants the ball played in behind for him to run onto, facing goal.
He does. I mean, to keep up with the speed of those counterattacks when you're 6'4". That's impressive.
Two strides, Andy, and he's gone from one end of the pitch to the other.
But in terms of his mobility, he's almost nearer an NBA point guard than he is a typical 6'4" centre forward, isn't it?
You're going to have to explain that to lots of people listening, Andy.
Big and quick.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
In short.
I think he is certainly, from the little I've seen of him, much more than just a target man. I mean, there's no question about it. You can't score that level of goals, some of which come in at Champions League level, against albeit weaker Champions League level opposition, and just be so one-dimensional that you haven't got other assets to your game. I don't think that's the case.
But, you know, James was talking about Odegaard before and how he took a big leap too far. The way he's put his career back together, did you see how he played against Atletico Madrid at the weekend? I mean, he started the season brilliantly with Real Sociedad, but he's taken time to piece it all back together. I think it would have been very easy for him to completely disappear without trace.
Yep.
But after two decent seasons in the Eredivisie, he has taken another huge leap, actually, coming from Vitesse, where he did pretty well, to Real Sociedad. And he has been superb. And he absolutely tore Atletico Madrid to bits over the weekend. He was brilliant.
It's good to know that he's still got that ability within him and he's still applying himself, because it would have been hugely disappointing what's happened to him over the last few years.
I mean, he's only 20.
Yeah, still now. Well. Exactly, yeah. James, I did promise people earlier that we'd talk about the Italian teams. Atalanta, I was very disappointed in them because it's their first ever Champions League game. They're playing against a team that they realistically probably want to, well, they certainly want to compete with at home, and they obviously didn't want to be smashed 4-0 away at Dinamo Zagreb. Moreover, part of the reason I was disappointed, though, is because this is a team who, in my mind, have a reputation for scoring goals and are exciting to watch and go out there and attack. And I didn't see a huge amount of the game, but they...
Dinamo were exciting to watch.
Well, yeah, I imagine they were. What's gone wrong with them?
Well, it's hard to put your finger on it, and I think they're struggling as well.
Was it the occasion that got to them?
Well, no, they said not. Certainly on the eve of the game, they said, look, we're not fazed by this because... Yeah, you know, we've played a lot of European football over the last few years. Mm. We've gone to places like Lyon, played really well. We beat Lyon. We've beaten Everton 5-1 at Goodison Park.
They were great against Dortmund.
They were great against Dortmund, unlucky to go out. So, and also, Gasperini was saying, you know, when you go away to Juventus, when you go away to Napoli, these are big occasions as well. So,
yeah, okay, fair point.
But I suppose everything's been building towards this. And there were 3,000 fans who made the trip over there. And I just wonder whether they'd built it up too much in their own heads and then weren't able to perform. Maybe the actual psychologically, the just preparing for this occasion itself was quite draining. And yeah, they were surprised as well, I think, by Dinamo, who have played one way all season and played another way in this game. And
yeah, okay.
All the preparation, I think, that they'd done. Usually they're very good at adapting and reacting. And that's why during the game, when they went one goal behind, two goals behind, I was confident that they could get back into it and get a result. Because that's what they do in Serie A. They're the team that have recovered the most points from losing positions last season. They were 2-0 down against Spal on the opening day, came back to win 3-2. And as you're right, Luke, this is a team that produces a hell of a lot of chances. You know, they were top scorers in Serie A last year.
Mm.
You know, they outscored Juventus, outscored Napoli. In terms of XG, last couple of years, always been top in the league. And that front three that they've got, who were all fit last night, all played, Zapata, Papu Gomez, Josip Ilicic.
Muriel off the bench as well.
Muriel off the bench. It was really surprising that they were essentially, yeah, they went goalless in this game. And they didn't really create anything aside from that Zapata chance at the end where he pins the centre-back, turns, and Livakovic, the goalkeeper, makes a fantastic save. Aside from that, they didn't produce
anything.
Well,
the game
anything.
Was gone by then, wasn't it?
The game
anyway.
Was gone completely. Yeah.
But James, would you say there's a certain type of pressure on them? Because a lot has been said about what an easy group it is for Manchester City. And I think there's challenges to a certain extent that will be offered to City throughout the group. But you would assume that they're going to go on, they're going to win the first four games, and then maybe take it easy over the last two once qualification is assured. The fact that Atalanta aren't just going into the Champions League to play it, but they're going into it with a realistic prospect of qualification, that adds something when you're a Champions League virgin, doesn't
it? Yeah, and I mean, they were talking before the game about how the fixture, not only the draw has done them a favour, but also the schedule has done them a favour as well, in that they're not going to play, you know, City in match day one or match day two and get pumped and be demoralised by
They're going to get pumped by Zagreb.
They're going to get pumped by Zagreb. But, you know, they go away to Zagreb, they then play Shakhtar at San Siro.
That's next, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then they'll have the doubleheader against City. But so they were looking at that and thinking, yeah, there's a chance that we might be able to go into those games with City
with 6 points. And I think for that to evaporate, I think they're going to have to get over that fast. I just think it was a...
Can't believe you called their home ground the San Siro then, James.
Well, it is
for the
Champions
League. Yeah. Why are they playing there? I didn't know that.
Well, in part
I thought you were doing a little joke there.
No, I wasn't. I didn't know that.
They're renovating their stadium and it won't be ready in time.
Okay, why did they choose San Siro? Because it's the closest.
Well, it was actually offered to them by the Milan clubs. They said, yeah, if you want to play there, that's absolutely fine. And
that's fascinating. That completely passed me by. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, Bergamo is not far at all from, you know, to riff on what we were talking about last week in terms of flights. You know, if you fly Ryanair to Milan, it will drop you off in Bergamo.
Get there at all.
Yeah, well.
I slept in a pod in Bergamo Airport once.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did.
That's interesting. How was that?
Uncomfortable and noisy.
I bet it was, yeah.
Is it like an MRI scanner?
Yeah.
Like,
That's the way you've made it. I pictured it in my mind to be just like that.
Yeah.
But I don't think everyone would have realised that Atalanta were playing at San Siro for their first Champions League campaign. And that's, to me, that's a little bit, the romantic in me says that's a little bit of a shame.
It is a shame, but it's, yeah, ultimately reflects that this is a progressive club who've decided to invest in their stadium.
Sure, but it's a shame that it's come along at the same time as their first Champions League campaign, isn't it? What about a team that does play at the San Siro?
And were playing at San Siro.
And were playing at San Siro this week. Inter. You didn't want me to talk about Conte's Inter this week, because you said, because I did the old kind of hackneyed joke, which was, oh, a typical Antonio Conte team, brilliant domestically, but not quite at the races in Europe after their 1-0 draw against Slavia Prague. I mean, I'm going to put it on you, though. Is that a disappointing start to their season in the Champions League, given they've got Borussia Dortmund and Barcelona also in their group?
Undoubtedly, because I think this was supposed to be a home banker. In this kind of group of death, you have to be picking up points against the quote-unquote weakest team.
Would it be particularly annoying for individuals who had backed Inter to win the Champions League this season at colossal 80-1 like this guy sitting right
have
here?
You?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. As soon as the draw went, I thought, you know what? I fancy him getting out of that.
Okay.
And who knows?
Well, it ain't over till it's over, Luke.
I apologise to Inter fans everywhere for my kiss of death there.
But I was really impressed by Slavia and how they approached this game. They were really courageous. They essentially marked Inter man for man, aside from Suchek, the midfielder who scored, 18 goals from last year. He was their top scorer. And he was, when Inter had the ball, his job was essentially to be the one free guy.
He was their top scorer for me. He's kind of a sort of holding midfield type player, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, their midfielders are their top scorers. Like this
Ronald Koeman vibes.
But you look at the way they play and the two strikers and Oli Inko as well as scoring the goal, which was a terrific finish, really underrated finish. Their job was to peel out, really, wasn't it? And try and divide the back three. And Stanciu, who is a really good player and a player who could have become a lot more and a player who still could become a lot more. I mean, he's only 25. The idea was for him to have the space to break into the box. He was the one that they wanted to create the chances for because he's got the highest quality, I suppose, in the team. And, you know, you look at him and I think that shows how far Slavia had come. There's no way they could get a player like that 2 years ago even. But it's easy to forget as well how good they were in the Europa League last season. And I know you can say, oh, yeah, it was the Europa League.
It beat Sevilla. It's their competition.
Yeah.
But they're the first team to knock Sevilla out of the Europa League since 2011.
Should be renamed the Sevilla Trophy, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But you look at the other teams they played in that, all teams with more money than them and with, you know, more resources than them. So Zenit, Bordeaux, a lot of big teams. And you think Chelsea, they were 5-1 down on aggregate after 27 minutes, 28 minutes of the second leg. Mm. And they still came back and got them to a point where Cesar Azpilicueta was booked for time wasting towards the end of that. I mean, they're not scared.
But so do you think they can have a say in this group then? Perhaps not qualify, but they
can't take them lightly at all.
They always could have done. And it's a bit like when you look at that group.
Are they playing their home games at the San Siro this year?
Well, they look like the home side, Luke. Because
The way it
wasn't a smash and grab counter-attack performance. They outplayed Inter. And the way they were able to get pressure on particularly Inter as a whole was brilliant to see, really. And Conte kind of held his hand up afterwards and said, They outran us when it came to tackles. They were more physical, more determined. And they, just by virtue of their really well-organized pressing game, they made it really difficult for Inter to play out from the back. They forced mistakes on Inter, and Inter were never allowed to settle. And
they were reduced to smashing the ball up there.
Yeah.
And that made it very, very difficult for Lukaku, for example, didn't it? Because all he was doing is trying to win the ball in the air most of the time.
Well, I mean, Lukaku's not fit. And he also has this problem where he reacts rather than anticipates the play.
Yeah.
And there are sometimes where he is quite easy to defend.
Well, he definitely goes through phases where he doesn't look like scoring. Mm. Like he's definitely a streaky forward when it comes to contributing goals. But then having said that, he got two in his first three for Inter in Serie A, and he's got quite a few goals through the summer for Belgium as well. So you'd think he'd be in one of those kind of periods. But then I guess he's had a difficulty with moving to a new club and all that's entailed. But I just wonder, I came away from that game thinking, I wonder if that injury time equaliser from Barella is going to be worth its weight come the end of the group stage. It might be that point might make a difference for them, because if what you guys are saying about Slavia Prague is true, I have no reason to doubt it, they might have a say in this group a bit more than people expect.
Yeah.
Special mention, of course, as well for referee in that game, Mr. Rudy Bouquet.
Hyacinth's son.
Although it's spelt Ruddy, so it looks like Ruddy Bouquet. Okay. But I presume it's pronounced Rudy Bouquet. He's a French referee, so.
Yes.
It's not as funny, but it is still quite funny.
Not my favourite French ref. He's just not officious enough.
Really? Who's your favourite French referee? Now we're talking. Get into the weeds.
Oh, Clément Turpin.
Yeah? My favourite Champions League referee is that German doctor, Dr. Felix.
Dr. Felix Brick.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. I knew you'd like him, James, as well.
They're all called doctor.
Are they?
Yeah.
Why?
It's like a...
Also, in Germany,
of respect.
If like our wives, Luke, the more degrees and honours they collect, in Germany, you actually have to refer to all of them. So if you've got, you know, PhDs, MAs, all this sort of thing...
You've got to do the long haul.
It would be Dr. Felix Brick.
I love that. Well, you to me are Dr. James Horncastle.
Makes me think of Doogie Howser, MD.
Yeah, a bit like that, yeah. I want to do a little bit more housekeeping, actually, before we chip off, because we are across OTC at footballrambledaily.com, the email address. We don't read quite as many emails out now as we did, but I want you to know that we do read them and we're interested in them, and when we get ones that are particularly pertinent, we will drop them into the show. And something that's come up... actually over and over again over the last week or two, it's just people are interested in a reminder of where they can watch these different football leagues. Now, of course, people can watch the Champions League on BT Sport, as we know. You can see James on that as well, doing his what would you call that show? The goal show. Yeah, with some of your other pals.
Yeah,
I actually bumped into you, didn't I,
in town. Soho.
I picture the scene. I bumped into you and Julien and Alvaro. as he referred to himself. Have I got that pronunciation right?
Alvaro.
In Soho.
Yes.
The other day.
Yeah.
A meeting of minds.
Mm.
Anyway, that's a tangential diversion. Where can people, just please remind our listeners where they can watch football in this country of these leagues that we talk about every week.
Well, of course, it's changed since the international break.
Changes every week. Changes every fucking week. And that's what people keep emailing.
But hopefully this will be the end to it. So you have BT covers you for France and Germany. But now Premier Sports covers you for Italy, Spain, Eredivisie. And of course, they've got Free Sports as well. Free Sports is... well, as it would imply, free on your Digibox. Now available in HD as well.
Oh, they're spoiling us, those friends.
So you have Portugal, and they will drip down Spanish and Italian games, the odd game here and there on it as well. So even if you haven't got one of the packages, you can pick up loads on Free Sports.
Great, okay. James, and anything else to add to that?
I'm trying to think about other football leagues on other channels. That
Russian Premier League on the YouTube.
The YouTube.
On the old YouTube, as the kids call it. Okay, before we chip off then, it's the bit we've seen the first round of games in the Champions League, and we've talked about some of the notable stories and some of the notable results. What, for you guys, are the takeaways, the big things that people can think about and learn for next week that perhaps we didn't know before these games took place?
I think one of the things is the Bundesliga ended up with the most wins of, you know, Europe's top five leagues, which, when you contrast that with last year, and how badly they did.
And Dortmund should have won against Barcelona.
So it should have been even better.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you would say Germany come out with the points
on match day one.
Yeah, there's a long way to go, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. And I suppose Dortmund are in a tough group, so, and they didn't win. They were one of the teams that didn't win, so that could get harder for them. Bayer Leverkusen also didn't win, James.
Mm-hmm.
So this is looking a little bit more threadbare by the moment.
But yeah, they had two wins.
Well,
yeah.
Look, my take home would be that even having turned 35, Mathieu Valbuena is quite magnificent.
I'll tell you what, he deserves a mention. It's absolutely right and proper that we don't go away from this show without mentioning Mathieu Valbuena, because he did look decent, along with the other fella against Spurs as well. He scored the other
Daniel
goal.
Daniel Pedence.
He looked great as well. So maybe that's a learning to take away too. All right, chaps, let's get out of here. And we'll chat about it next time. James, what do you think? How do you find the customer care here at Football Ramble Daily?
Yeah, some of the most caring, loving teddy bear people that, you know.
Present company excluded, right?
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around the duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.